Joining me now for our November, yeah, listen to me, January edition of Our Town is 2020 already. I can't believe that. Chief Michael Schick with Sisal Valley Fire and Rescue, or Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority.
That's correct.
And Matt House is here as well. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having us.
So I was looking at a post, I believe it was on Facebook, and I noticed that one of the changes made recently was that you moved an ambulance over to the main fire station.
That's correct, yes.
What was the reasoning for that, or what was the reason you guys did that?
Well, it goes back to the whole theory about what we're trying to do here, and Matt and I were just talking about this on the way over. I mean, we've got a new motto. It's one mission, one team. And if you look around the country, certainly in the state of Oregon, most EMS and fire departments are one agency. And a little bit different here in Florence. Both agencies work very closely together and have a great relationship. But we're looking to take it to this next step where we're actually working much more closely together. And right now, our ambulance district is just swamped with calls, extremely busy. And one of the ways that we thought, well, maybe we can help out with the fire department side. So let's put an ambulance there. And if we need to, we can have firefighters staff that ambulance. So it's worked out very well so far. Like I said, we're working very closely together, and our firefighters are absolutely, you know, EMS qualified, medically qualified to be running these calls. So it's just, you know, another tool that we can use to help out when we're just getting swamped with calls, and you know, with our population, let's face it, it's an elderly population, so there's a big impact on our EMS services that we can provide.
How does that work organizationally then? I mean, is that ambulance still under the Western Lane Authority as far as responsibility goes?
Absolutely. And that sort of leads into, I mean, this Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority. So we started this in October officially. WELFIA is what we call it, went live.
Citizens, everything has to have a
exactly, name, yeah. So I can get a new shirt that says WELFIA. Citizens won't notice any difference. If they call and they have a fire, a Sisal Valley Fire and Rescue apparatus is going to show up. If they have a medical call, a Western Lane Ambulance District ambulance is going to show up. So what we did was, with WELFIA, we've just merged administratively. So my official title is Fire and EMS Chief. So I'm the chief for the fire department, also the chief for the ambulance district. And then we also moved in our operations chiefs. So Matt and Jim Dickerson on the fire side, they now have oversight over both agencies. So personnel, equipment are still in their respective agencies. That hasn't changed at all. We've just merged administratively. So we're saving a lot of money there, which was very important. And since we were working so closely together anyway, it just makes it a little bit easier now to share administrative responsibilities. So, yeah, equipment still stays with the original agencies.
Well, now you mentioned that Western Lane has been inundated with calls. So, and I noticed something, I believe it was on the Western Lane Facebook page, that calls overall in the past decade and even in the last year are up from what they've been. How is that with personnel, Ben? How is that been for Western Lane in order to handle the increase in calls?
In 2015, we moved our staffing model to different. We actually have 5 full-time EMS providers, and we have a part-time providers as well. And this plays into our big model as well. We're looking at a tiered system. But last year, we ran over 3,800 calls, which was 200 more than any other high year. We also have the MIH program that takes away workload as well. But we have interfacility transfers where we ran 600 out of those calls, which is from here to Riverbend, here to Coos Bay. So those calls are long durations, take a lot of time away from the district.
Were those part of the calls that were also an increase over the last year, or was it medical necessary calls that were?
Overall, across the board, everything increased percentage-wise.
Now, how does that work with, you know, a financial structure there? If you have increased calls, do you have increased funding in order to?
Well, we do get some funding from transport fees, but we're limited as far as with Medicare or Medicaid. You only get pennies on the dollars reimbursement for that. But no, we're fixed as far as our revenue goes. I mean, it's a very, very tiny increase each year as property taxes go up. But we're limited by the state and how high taxes can go up. So, yeah, we have to handle this increased call volume by finding synergies, by finding savings where we can.
I was going to say, because if you increase, 200 calls, that's the financial cost of that has to be pretty extravagant. I mean, because each individual call is not inexpensive.
It really is. So, like I said, I mean, it's just, and Matt does a great job. And where can we save funding? Can we bring in a part-time employee when we have a full-time employee off? And can we push out equipment purchases another year? It's a balancing act that we have to do. But funding is very limited. But every EMS agency, every agency that provides emergency services is in the same boat. So we all look for ways to save money constantly.
And I guess one of the things that people in your position don't necessarily want to have to deal with or have to do is ask for a tax increase. I mean, that's probably not the first priority.
That is really the last priority. And we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can and we're being fiscally responsible. One thing I do appreciate about the fire department and ambulance district, they take very good care of their equipment and apparatus. And you come down to our fire station, you say, well, those apparatus look brand new. And no, they're 25, 30 years old, and we have to think about replacing those. But so we do everything we can to stretch out the life of our equipment and our apparatus. If we can delay purchases, we do that. But it's like everybody that's on a fixed income and has a budget. You just have to be real careful about it.
Well, I'm sure population increase as well as population aging probably has something to do with the increase in calls over time. Mm-hmm. It would seem, though, does it not stretch the staff pretty thin if you've got 200 additional calls in a year's time? I mean, what does that do for staffing-wise? Does that create a need for more, or how does that?
I think the best way of describing what we need to do is be more efficient. And we're looking at how can we be more efficient by using our part-time employees with our full-time employees and with the volunteers in the fire department. To get together, combined, we have roughly 75 people between the districts. So how do we maximize those people to, continue to deliver high care, high service delivery models? And we're looking, again, back to the BLS model tiered system, where we can put a BLS car out there to help with more public assist, lift assist, and that'll take away from the advanced life support system, where we can actually put them where we need to put them.
Well, and the thing about emergency services, too, you never know exactly when you're going to need that person.
That's
so
true.
I guess, that's right. Where the on-call comes. And, when you respond to an emergency call, what brings more people in to the incident that's happening on there. What do you see in the coming years? In the starting of a new decade, obviously, we're dealing with probably 1 year at a time or maybe even one quarter at a time. Mm-hmm. How do you see things moving forward? Are you guys going to need more staff, less staff? Are we going to need more apparatus? Or how do you see that looking in the next, say, year to 5 years?
We'll always need more staffing. I mean, that's something that, especially on the fire side, we rely very heavily on volunteers. The majority of our firefighters are volunteer firefighters. They give up their time, have the same training and certifications as a career firefighter would have. But, it's tough to devote that much time to your community. And luckily, we do have some men and women that really are interested in providing that service, so they come and volunteer their time. But, adding personnel is just financially, that's a big hurdle to add career personnel on either side. So we'll continue to look for new volunteers. I don't know if you've seen our sign. We're always looking for volunteers. And
right.
We run academies a couple times a year. So I think that's going to be our big push. It's not only this next year, but continuing. And then we do have, been looking very closely at our finances for the next few years. We've produced some financial prediction models, which are very important in how we plan. We've got some aging facilities that we have to take care of, as well as aging apparatus. So right now we're in the mode of, how can both agencies work more closely together, save money, and then how can we, divert some of that money to some of the necessary expenses? Yeah, adding career personnel, I just don't see that happening with our current revenue base. And I don't see that increasing that much in the future. We are looking at some additional construction in Florence. I know they're trying to put in some more high-density housing and which raise, you know, further issues for us. And you get a lot of people, then you have a lot more medical calls and a lot more fire calls. So it's how you balance that. You get an increase in property taxes, but you're also getting an increase in calls.
So maybe help me out here and understand this, because I know that having a new staff member, and putting a new staff member on, it costs more than just that salary that they earn on there. What is the average cost of a new full-time personnel member when it comes down to, you know, with benefits and everything that goes along with that?
It's about 50% increase on just when you're looking at benefits and payroll taxes. And, you know, with our retirement system, the state retirement system, that's in poor shape. So they keep asking us to contribute more money. But you take your basic salary and multiply it by 1.5, and that's what it costs for an employee. Entry-level firefighter is starting at about, you know, $50,000 a year, which is very reasonable for a firefighter. Paramedic can, you know, start at about $60,000 to $70,000 a year. Much more training involved.
So
there.
About 60, 120, and 30 is 150. So about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's.
Sorry,
it's,
I had to think on
our feet. Our personnel cost anywhere from 60% to 80% of our revenue. So it's a very, very tight balance that we have to, because you have to take care of your facilities, you have to take care of your apparatus, but you have to take care of your people too.
So do you find that the addition of the ambulance at the fire station does that decrease call times to like the north side of town and stuff like that? Was that also in the model of wanting to do that?
Currently, it has not, but in the future, yeah, very much so. As we get that tiered system up and running, it will deflect away from the northern calls. Or if we had a serious call, they would automatically go to it, initiate basic life support until ALS arrived. So absolutely, it'll save time in those critical calls as well as just the routine calls that we can help somebody, you know, that may have fallen down or maybe stuck in a location they're not really wanting to be stuck at, out of that position. That's really the goal, is to take away the ALS, make the ALS more available for the true emergency calls.
Do you see any ambulances going to any other of the station houses at any, or is it pretty much just the main station house?
Well, and this is not a staffed ambulance. It's just an ambulance that we put there that the firefighters can, you know, if needed and requested by the ambulance district, they can jump on. But absolutely, we would love to spread out our personnel. It's when you're only looking at 4 or 5 personnel, it's, you know, you can only go to 1 or 2 stations.
Now, what about the, there's been some talk over time about maybe building on to the Western Lane ambulance building or increasing that size there, maybe adding a fire station to that area. Is that also a potential?
We've talked about that. It's that building is actually owned by the hospital, and we lease that from them. I don't know that we would add, and we have talked about that, but I don't think that we would add to that facility versus, you know, maybe could
creating
we,
a new one.
Yeah, and well, or enhance the stations that we have, some of the fire stations, which haven't been used in the past by the ambulance district, but could we move people out there? Thing is, we don't have sleeping quarters at most of our stations. I mean, it's just volunteers responding from home. But we could certainly do that, and I think we're looking very closely at that. And it would be nice to spread out. I mean, the ambulance district covers 1,000 square miles.
That's a lot of space.
And that's coming out of the hospital base right now, which is a perfect location for our ambulance district, because majority of our calls are going to be around that area. So that works out very well. But, yeah, any time that we could spread out our resources, we're looking very closely at that. And it would help our response times.
What about the station that's located near City Hall there? Is some changes need to be made to that?
That belongs to the city. That's not they let us use that station. We're looking very closely at where our stations are, how we staff them, how we can staff them. With limited personnel, sometimes it makes sense, you know, should we have people responding to a different station than what they do now? So we have several stations that we're not using right now. We do use Station 2, and that's the one that downtown quite a bit. But it is getting old, so we have to make that decision. Do we want to put a lot of funds in there for necessary repairs, or do we want to move our personnel elsewhere? So that's something that the board really has to talk a lot about and decide what's the best for our citizens, what's the best way for us to provide emergency care.
Has the changing of the tsunami zone and the redistricting of how the tsunami area works, has that affected any of the stations, or will it affect any of the stations?
Station 2, the station downtown is certainly, that's an issue for that one. So that's something else that we have to take into account. I mean, is it worth putting a lot of money in there if this station would not be able to be used during a tsunami event?
All right. Let's see, is there anything I'm missing here? I'm trying to think. I guess that's...
Well, people are going to see Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority, that name out there. It's not going to change. You know, like I said before, they'll see a fire engine from Scioscia Valley Fire and Rescue and an ambulance from Western Lane Ambulance. That won't make any difference. But I think, you know, going forward, absolutely, I think this is the right thing to do for the districts. Luckily, we have two boards that really want to work together and provide the best possible care. And we have employees and volunteers that want to work closely together. So I think, you know, other than, you know, we know we have some issues we have to deal with, I think we have great personnel. And I think it's going to make it much easier to solve a lot of these problems. And, you know, like I always say, if anybody ever wants to come talk to me about it, all I have to do is call the station. My admin staff has my calendar. They'll find an open spot and put them on there. So, and I love having people come down and talk to me and give me some feedback. And I know a big issue, maybe we can talk about this in a future episode here, but people are interested about wildland calls, wildland fires, and they see what's going on in California. Just real briefly, we're prepared for that. There's a lot of things you can't prepare for and some of those larger fires. But if anybody have any questions like that, be more than happy to talk to them.
Speaking of that, I was just looking at something on the Australia fires right now.
Yes.
And seeing how incredibly that had just grown and just totally out of control, and really not a whole lot you can do with their limited resources.
And unfortunately, that's the takeaway a lot of times, is that, you know, if you get 50, 60, 70 mile an hour winds, it's very hot. All we can do is try and help evacuate people. You can't fight a fire that's moving 70 miles an hour, and that's how fast it moves with the wind.
And I was just mentioning today about, you know, our rain here. I'd rather have 14 days of continual rain than 14 days of drought.
The humidity and the moisture really helps. Yeah. So, yeah, we'd be looking at a very hot, very dry period, very windy period, which could happen and has happened in the past. But it is something that we have to prepare for, not only a earthquake and a tsunami, but, you know, wildland fire as well.
So you've put in a few months now. How's it going?
Oh, it's been fantastic. My wife and I love it here. I know we had a great weather-wise for the summer, and so I think we got spoiled right off the start. But dogs love the beach, and we learned a couple weeks ago, don't go on the beach in a high tide event.
Oh, you just learned that.
Yes, we'd heard about it, but now we actually know. And I think my jacket and my jeans are still drying out from that.
At least they're still not in the ocean. Never turns.
Well, my sunglasses are.
Oh, okay.
They're probably on the way to Japan right now. But no, we love the area. We have a great neighborhood, and you know, my staff is fantastic.
You're not just saying that because he's in the room with me.
I am not. No, he knows. I won't say that to him. No, it's
never turn your back on the ocean.
But I'm still a diehard University of Washington Husky fan. So
I'm
Okay.
How about the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, that's okay. But no, it's been great, and my wife and I are just ecstatic to be here. And like I said, it's great people, great community, and we really love it here.
Chief Michael Schick, Matt House, thank you so much for being here today, and have a great day.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And stay tuned to Our Town. We'll be talking with Senator Arne Roblin next. He's going to let us know what legislative things happened in 2019, what's up for 2020, and what he's got left in the tank on this edition of Our Town.